Ladies and gentlemen, it is showtime. Please welcome the team of the Fulhamish podcast.
It's the Fulhamish podcast, your independent voice of Fulham FC. My name's Sammy James. Welcome to the show, the difficult second podcast of the year. Loads to discuss today. A busy 7 days in the world of Fulham FC. Another signing across the line in Andreas Pereira and more transfer rumours reaching towards a conclusion. Also today, we're going to be discussing Fulham's pretty shambolic ticket price announcement for the opening game against Liverpool. There's a load of correspondence, and this will catch on at the end of the podcast. There's some fun ones today. And I'm joined by the regular Thursday club of Jack Collins.
Hello, listeners. Hello, Sammy. Hello, Peter.
And Peter Rutzler.
Hello, how are we doing?
All right, Melton. I've had to shut the window to do this podcast and already I am feeling the effects. I'm sweating in parts of my body, like my knees, my arms. It's going to be an uncomfortable hour, I think.
Yeah, I went down to Legoland last night to watch the game Brentford.
Very good, very good. I was like, well, that's quite a random activity on a Tuesday night.
Yeah, then, I went to watch that Germany-Spain game in the Euros, and the game was excellent. It was really good, but it was just so, so sticky, like muggy around the place. So, I do feel you. I feel your pain about the backs of your knees, et cetera, et cetera.
I haven't been to the real Legoland for a long time. Is it still going strong?
I think it is. Maybe we should do a group trip the same weekend as Brentford away and be like Legoland twice in a weekend.
It's on the same train line as well, isn't it? It's out to Windsor. You probably could feasibly do both in the same day. I haven't been to Legoland in a long time, but I remember when I went, I remember being very obsessed with the cars that you could drive around. You could get your driving license. I think
it's
I got
the only
my
driving license I've ever got, to be fair.
I think I got 8 driving licenses when I went to Legoland all those years ago. Great place. Maybe, yeah, go again one day. Right, let's get on to latest transfer news. And Peter, another signing across the line. Andreas Pereira has confirmed his news to Fulham. He's been pictured in the pink training kit because we don't have a kit for any of the players to wear in their transfer announcements. So they've been rinsing the training kit for all the new players. And look, we discussed on this show last week that it was one that I think there's mixed feelings on, but now he's here, another transfer across the line. I'm excited to see what he can do.
At least he's over the line. That's the main thing. Another one on the books for the trip to Portugal with the players going off and with this go out. So not long afterwards, I think is the best way to describe it. So, another good play through the door. You're right. I think, as we discussed before, there's a lot more uncertainties, I think, or questions, which can go either like one of two ways. You know, he could either be a player with a point to prove, he does really well in a really good environment, or it doesn't work out. But, Marco Silva sees something in him. He's a player that I personally think will benefit from stepping outside of being a Manchester United player, stepping out of that shadow, which is always a strange thing. You know, you can go on loan to places, but it's not the same thing as fully committing somewhere. You know, it's not the same thing as setting down your roots, knowing that this is your home. There is no alternative. There's no, if you do well, you could, you know, return to the team of the side you've been away on loan from. Sorry, that is the heat mucking up my words there. That is very clumsily phrased. Or for instance, not doing so well, and the same thing applies. You know, and you go back home. This time, he's stepped out. He's taken the plunge. He will have to give everything to Fulham, and you know, there's clearly talent there. I think, you know, observers at Flamengo could see that as a reason they wanted to keep him, even though he made quite a big mistake, I think, in the Copa Libertadores final. But even then, he still was able to win a lot of them back. You see that from some of his goals, a few of them in pre-season. But, you know, there's clearly a good player in there. And there's a reason that, you know, United managers over this, you know, turbulent past decade have all kept him in the squad, or as part of the squad, sure, homegrown, but they've offered him new deals, and there clearly is something there, and it's now for Fulham to get something out of him, and where he'll fit in will be very interesting too.
I liked in your article, Peter, that you referred to his nickname, which is the preseason Pirlo. I think we've probably all seen the pictures of that unbelievable goal he scored against Brentford, which I think was the beginning of last season's preseason. It's an unbelievable dipping volley. And if you look at kind of his highlight reel, Jack, there is obviously the sublime, but there is also, and this wasn't in preseason, and I wasn't aware of how big a mistake he made in the Copa Libertadores final, which cost Flamengo the final in the 94th minute. It was in extra time. I was not aware of what a clanger he dropped in that game, but that must have been a particularly scarring moment. He must have done well as well to kind of brush off that and still be kind of revered from the Flamengo fans. I'd have thought a mistake like that would kind of consign you to, well, forever being a scapegoat.
Well, I think there was a lot of responses. There was, you know, a couple of calls from people who'd watched him in Brazilian football. I think Sam Typer went out last week saying, if you watched Andres Pereira at Flamengo, you know, what did you make of him? And it was mentioned in almost every single response. So I don't think it's been forgotten or brushed under the carpet by any stretch of the imagination. What I do think is that his performances across the course of the campaign were generally good, and he was generally hardworking, and he genuinely took to the place. And that, you know, in some ways, you know, a player never wants to make a mistake. That's you know, it's an easy one to make. People can, you know, slip, people can fall over, these things happen. But ultimately he did drop a clanger, and what we've got to is a point there where we're looking at it and going, okay, fans are going, right, you know, that's not going to be forgotten, but you can forgive it if you think someone's heart is in the right place. And it did seem to be that way with that relationship between Pereira and the Flamengo fans. So you look at this and think, yes, it's a new home. And I kind of double down on what Peter says here, in that it's somewhere that he can now call home and settle. And I think he's got a point to prove. And yes, there are, you know, I think the tone around this one has been generally more negative than perhaps around some of the other acquisitions we've been linked with. Definitely around Palhinha, definitely around Solomon. This one seems to be one that's divided the fan base a little bit more, I would say, than the others. But there are elements to be excited about. And I think that there's lots to get behind in terms of Andreas Pereira. He is going to give you that work rate. He is going to give you that fight and that fire. And you know, whether it works or not, I think this is someone that if we get behind, we'll rally to the cause. And I think that's something that, you know, Fulham could do with. We've had enough players not rallied to it, you know, that we've seen over previous years who maybe didn't have that fire in their belly, that point to prove. So I think that there's something to be, you know, liked in that deal. And, you know, we often have words about, you know, when we sign a player and we're like, this is a player we've watched for years. And then you're like, is it? But this time it really is, isn't it? You know, when we interviewed Tony Khan back, what, 3 years ago? 4 years ago, maybe, was it? Was it 4 years? This was a player that he talked about then, as a player that Fulham had been interested in. So not only is it someone that clearly Marco Silva has wanted and got through the door, but it's also someone that's obviously been pinging up on Fulham's kind of recruitment system for a little while. And that does interest me because there is something obviously there.
He's wanted him through the forbidden door.
Yes.
We got an email all about Andreas Pereira, the title of which was Let's Get Excited About Andreas Pereira. And this is from Camille Farris. Normally save emails for the end of the show, but this one feels pertinent to bring up now. He says, hey guys, big fan of the pod and your online articles. Hope you're all safe and well. Listened to last week's pod and was surprised to hear that the mood around Fulham is uncertainty / doubt around the now confirmed acquisition of Andreas Pereira. I have to say I'm really excited about this move and I wanted to tell you why. He goes on to say that he's been following Pereira pretty closely since his time at United under Van Gaal. His dad's a pretty big Man U supporter, and as a result, he watches a lot of their games with him. He then goes on to say, I have to say that him being frozen out at United had little to do with his visibility and more to do with managers like Jose Mourinho's preferences, and later, the form and or price tag of players playing in front of him. I think he's a little bit tarnished in the eyes of the media as someone who's a flop because he didn't make the cut at United, although arguably they really needed a player with his talents last season. 8 million plus add-ons is a steal for someone who, in my opinion, is a nailed-on starter at the majority of clubs outside the top 10. He brings Premier League experience, and his loan moves mean that he'll be likely to be adaptive to new styles, particularly the one Silva uses at Fulham, as he's expressed his desire to play in a technical ball retention system. He plays with a chip on his shoulder, something Fulham have lacked for a long time, in my opinion, and he has a willingness to get into the heads of opponents. He then says that he feels like Mitrovic is the only real player in the current squad that has that side of him, but as a result, the fans love him. Pereira brings that fire and loves to get involved in hard challenges and 50-50s, particularly for an attacking player. He isn't afraid to go back and forth with opponents and seems to have a lot of fight in him. I, for one, really enjoy players who bring that attitude, and I hope it can permeate through the rest of the squad. It will be vital in a relegation scrap. Finally, he says his abilities aren't only functional, they're fun. Fulham fans love a player who get them on their feet, and Pereira has lots of tricks up his sleeve to do just that. Most fans will have heard that he has a fantastic driven shot from range, but he's also a dead ball specialist capable of delivering a corner into the box dangerously or curling in a free kick to test the opponent's keeper. He has been criticised at United for trying too many Hollywood passes, but he was playing in a deeper role there and as an attacking midfielder, something he said he spoke to Silva about being utilised as prior to signing. These audacious passes will be more encouraged. He finally goes on to say that he is not Ruben Loftus-Cheek. He has seen some comparisons to RLC, but he thinks the fact that this that was a loan and this is a permanent transfer, plus the fact that Ruben Loftus-Cheek was underutilized by Scott Parker, thinks he means this won't be a similar signing to last time. He finally says, I truly believe Pereira will be a success at Fulham and produce plenty of displays to turn the English media's perception of him around. Now he's here, why don't we get behind our new face and show him the support and love that we have for this brilliant institution. And that is from Camille. Brilliant, brilliant email, Camille. Thank you very, very much. Eager to get your thoughts on what Camille said.
Yeah, I think it's very fair. I think you can't ignore the context of what Man United have been like for the past decade since he's sort of broken into the team, you know, inverted commas, and the managers that have changed. The likes of Mourinho is not known for bringing through young players. And also the players he's had in front of him. When he's been involved, he's often been in different positions, just trying to get onto the field. And I take comfort from the fact that he's always still been there. They've always kept him around. That despite the fact that he's not actually been able to, you know, make himself a first-team choice, which isn't easy at a club like Manchester United with the expectations and the sort of uncertainty that surrounded them for quite a while, you know, the fact he's still there in contention on the books is encouraging. And obviously he's 26 now, and it is a bit like, if he's going to kick on, if he's going to start making a name and start to win things, I suppose is now's the time to do it. So you know, I don't see him as a Loftus-Cheek at this point.
No.
I think the obvious answer to that is that he's not on loan, so he has to give everything. And also the chip on the shoulder, I'd definitely throw Harry Wilson in there. He definitely plays like he's got a chip on the shoulder.
Yeah, I'd agree with that as well. I think,
I did think about that is I felt like we've had a few shithouses that wanted to get in the heads in the last few years. I mean, obviously, Johansson is the obvious example there. But I think you need a mixture of.
I think Harrison Reed has a bit of that in his locker as well.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, he's vocal.
I think you need a mixture of players that are sensible and grounded and a few players that want to get in. Referees or opposition's players' heads. I definitely agree that Mitrovic is the one that does the large majority of Fulham's complaining. He must be such a knob to play against Mitrovic at times. You do have to wonder, don't you? Let's move on then to some rumoured signings. Obviously, great to get Andreas Pereira through the door, and one that's developed massively over the weekend, Jack. Kevin Mbabu, Fulham and Wolfsburg agreed a €6 million fee for the Swiss right back. Ronan Murphy and Kicker both were first to this to report it over the weekend, and particularly with the context of the fact that Nico Williams has gone to Nottingham Forest for a reported £17 million. This seems like a hell of a deal for me. And also what I particularly enjoyed is Fulhamish tweeted the rumour. We don't have a first of rumours. We just kind of repost the ones that we think have some credibility. And out of context, Football Manager commented back pretty quickly, which got the entire FM community tweeting about the fact that Kevin Mbabu is apparently a bit of a cheat code when it comes to Football Manager. I also know he's a bit of a cheat code on FIFA, so I imagine some of our younger listeners who play either of those games will be particularly excited to see Mbabu at the Cottage if it comes off.
Yeah, I think there's real positives to this. One, the fee seems very reasonable, and I think that he is a good player. Last year was a bit of a mess from Babu. He didn't play very much. He was injured, and then after injury, he refused a COVID vaccine, got COVID, and basically Wolfsburg kind of dropped him out of the squad. And so there's an element of that that is a bit weird, I would suggest, especially once it's all been put in together, and the fact he wasn't allowed to play, freedom of choice, et cetera. But it did make me feel a little bit uncomfortable, not necessarily in terms of, you know, the vaccine whole thing. It's just kind of the idea of how it kind of worked and what he was willing, you know, what he was willing to drop, you know, in order and not be able to play. So there were some uncomfortables there, but I do think that he is a good player. And I think that he's got a good stride forward. He's got a really good ball carrying ability. He's a brilliant dribbler of the ball. He's really quick. And his crossing is deceptively good, which is an interesting one. He's actually had a kind of funny kind of place in the way that crossing works. And when you look at the stats, because of just quite how poorly Wolfsburg have played they've been so up and down over the past couple of years. So he's had this kind of weird kind of changing cast in front of him, which has kind of flicked out, and used to have Oliver Glasner as his coach, and they started with Van Bommel this season. It all went a bit, you know, to pot, and they had a really bad year. But actually, his forwards he's been working with, I like Lucas Nemecha, but it haven't been brilliant. So I'm going to give him a little bit of slack in terms of his crossing's better than I think the statistics give him credit for. But there does I do think that this is someone who fits that Marco mold of a fullback. I think he's better defensively than Nico Williams, which I think was a massive plus point. You know, the fees that we were talking about for Nico, much as I liked him and much as I thought he was excellent going forward, there were defensive questions that I think this Fulham system would have left exposed. And for that amount of money, I think it would have left us in a tricky place. For Forrest, I don't mind it because they're probably going to play him as a wing back. And I think that actually probably gets more out of his skill set going forward. So therefore, I can completely see why they've paid the fee. But I think we were probably right to drop out. We need our fullbacks to be a slightly more defensively cohesive this season than what we would have got off Nico Williams. I think Mbabu kind of fits the bill from where I'm standing, and at a relatively good price.
Next rumour, Peter, that I wanted to come on to, Issa Diop from West Ham. This seems to have progressed a lot as well. Now, I know that Issa Diop had a bit of a rotten season for West Ham last year. I thought that when I remember him signing for West Ham and that first season he was there, I remember West Ham fans absolutely raving about him, but looked like his confidence was shot with West Ham. He was absolutely nowhere near the first team. I remember that he was so unwanted by David Moyes that even when the Kurt Zouma cat thing happened, he still didn't put Issa Diop in, despite the amount of heat that Kurt Zouma and the club got from that particular story, which I think says a lot about the lack of faith that Moyes has in Issa Diop. However, there is a very talented centre-back in there. If Marco can get him confident, it's a signing that I quite like. My first thought was, ooh, seems like a lot of money for someone that's absolutely has failed at West Ham, let's be honest. But maybe there's something in there.
Well, that you mentioned that first season. I'm sure he was linked with quite a heavy, big money move in the summer after his first
game. United, wasn't it?
It was United, yeah. And I'm sure it was over 40 million or a figure like that. So I don't think there's a question mark necessarily about his ability. It's about showing his ability, you know, again, and that'll be the challenge for Marco Silva if Fulham can get this one over the line. So my latest understanding, the last thing I think I wrote about with this one was that Fulham had made a second offer of around 12 million, I think. I think judging from some of the other reports that have emerged around this, it seems like West Ham may want a lot more. That's not from my own knowledge. That's just inferring from what I'm seeing and then also hearing myself. I think right now it's a difficult one because I think all other clubs looking at Fulham will look at them and go, they really need a centre-back. And they probably need one quite quickly. And that will make any sort of negotiation that bit harder. But I think if you're looking for a player of quality. You know, we talked about Romagnoli. You know, he's going to Lazio now, isn't he? So that's sort of been done. It's about getting someone who has some Premier League experience, can adapt quickly. And maybe we're seeing that pattern with the way Fulham are approaching recruitment. You know, there's an experience tinge to who Fulham are going for. You know, we've seen with Forest that they've gone for players who could probably are young with more potential, but then if they went down, could be like a platform to get them straight back up. Whereas with Fulham, it's slightly more of an experienced angle. You know, the likes of Bernd Leno being linked, Issa Diop, as we're talking about, Andres Pereira has played in the Premier League, João Palhinha has played in the top flight in Portugal. You know, there is that sort of element to what Fulham are doing, and someone like Diop fits that bill. And sure, he's not been involved at West Ham so much, and that does leave a question mark as to why. And I'd be curious to know a bit more about why. Should it progress further? But you know, Craig Dawson's done very well there since he's gone in. Kurt Zouma is obviously a good player, and they invested a lot of money in as well, and Ogbonna too. So, an interesting one that I think could be a good signing. And I think above all, though, Fulham do need to get a centre half in, and probably one pronto, to be honest.
Jack, quick thoughts on Diop?
Yeah, statistically not great for the last couple of years. It's a little bit of a worrying one, but I agree with you in the sense that there is definitely a player in there somewhere. Whether that is going to be the answer to Fulham's defensive issues, I don't know. I think this would be one that's an interesting concept. It does obviously bring Premier League experience. We talk about this, and it is important. It doesn't need to be, you know, a real veteran to bring experience, but someone who has played in the division and, you know, is comfortable in London already means that there's less of a landing zone, shall we say, and there's less of a, you'd have to take quite as much time to settle, hopefully, which makes sense. So I can completely see why Fulham are pursuing it. I don't know how high I'd go on the fee before I was like, I'm not sure this is the one. And I agree with Peter on that, you know, clubs know that Fulham are in the market for centre backs, which does mean that we are malleable in certain ways. Clubs will be looking to make the most out of that situation that's developed. So it's going to be one to keep an eye on. At that kind of, the kind of prices it is now, I don't mind. If it gets too much higher, I think it might be better options out there. But one to monitor, I would say.
It does beg the question of why centre-back wasn't literally started from the very, very first moment that we knew that we were going up. Because as you say, it's pretty...
It might well have been, you know.
I mean, yeah, I'm not saying... I realise it's such a kind of basic thing to say, like as if they'd been sat on a beach for 3 months not looking at centre backs and realizing that we need a centre back, damn it, why didn't no one mention it? But still, it is a bit of a situation now, nearly three weeks from the start of the season, and it is just Tim Ream and Tosin Adebayo. So it needs someone and needs some more rumors, I think, to pick up that on that front as well. Peter, the latest on Manus Solomon, I'm hearing this kind of rumor now that it will happen, but it will happen on the 1st of August and we cannot officially sign him until then. But I'm kind of hearing little bits and bobs. Do we have anything more concrete on what's the latest with Manor?
Yeah, nothing since I last reported on him, which was over the weekend. This is definitely the most complicated transfer I've reported on, probably might become the most ever. I can't imagine there'll be one like this in these kind of circumstances, but as we know, parties are in agreement. The reason it's been held up again, now, as far as I understand it, Manus Solomon's completed a medical. So in terms of all the basic requirements for the transfer, it's there. The only thing missing is the fact that it's been processed internationally. And due to a recent FIFA ruling, it means his transfer can't be processed to August the 1st, as you mentioned, Sammy. This is kind of seen as one final administrative hurdle, and it's all to do with Solomon being a Ukraine-based foreign player. We talked a little bit about this context before, the fact that the rules have changed for players based in Ukraine as a result of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, with FIFA basically allowing these players to suspend their contracts to be registered elsewhere. This was then extended in late June for another year. However, on July the 2nd, FIFA made an amendment to their previous ruling, which stated that transfers involving players based in Ukraine who have suspended their contract will not be allowed to be processed through FIFA's transfer matching system until August the 1st. Basically, they won't be ratified, these transfers. They won't be able to get an international transfer certificate. And the reason for that was just to assist the Ukrainian FA, who would be faced with quite a number of potential transfers all at once. So, yeah, it leaves it in a kind of a, I suppose, a limbo situation. I don't know, and I can't say with certainty what the situation is. Because if Solomon is in this period, you know, if he's not attached technically to Shakhtar, then like any other trialist, you would think he'd be able to train and play in preseason games. The problem with that is if he's not under contract, there's an insurance risk. You know, you want him to be insured, because if he got injured, you know, you'd be very concerned if the transfer hasn't gone through. So the last time I checked in on this, Fulham were trying to explore a way around it. It seems like at the moment, you know, the regulations are all there. You know, these are FIFA rulings. The transfer couldn't be ratified to August the 1st in its current format. So, I mean, that would be a problem if he can't be involved in preseason. I doubt that will be the case. I expect he'll be involved, but clearly it's not been enough for it to be officially ratified just yet, and we haven't seen him yet in Fulham colours. So I'm, in terms of how I feel about it, I'm not in terms of whether the transfer will go through or not, I'm not concerned about that. I expect it to still go through. I think the concern is the fact that, you know, it's getting close to the start of the season when it's all officially signed off. But then, and then also the nature of the deal itself, which we talked about last week, going through these different elements when it probably didn't need to do this.
Yeah, seems like we've robbed Paul's pay Peter a little bit, and it's just made our lives slightly more difficult for ourselves. And I mean, if he can't play pre-season friendlies, you'd imagine he'll be fit because he'll be able to keep himself fit and Fulham will give him a schedule and all of that. But if he can't train with the club and then he can't get match practice, that kind of means he won't be able to hit the ground running. You'd almost have thought for maybe 3 or 4 weeks, well into August really, before he actually could be able to play and make an impact. And as we talked about on last week's pod, there are big winnable-ish games in that opening six matches. Yes, Liverpool is a bit of a pass, but Wolves away, Brentford at home, Brighton at home, these are all matches that Fulham need to be picking up points in. And to not have probably our star attacking signing this summer playing those will be a hell of a blow if that's the case. So fingers crossed they can find a way around it. And the final one I wanted to come on to, Jack, in the transfer section, Bernd Leno. This is a rumour that's been going around for a while. We didn't discuss it last week. It seems to have picked back up again. I'm seeing reports that he hasn't travelled with Arsenal
and
for their
other reports
pre-season
that he has.
Friendly tour.
Seeing report, other reports that he and Arsenal have said he has, but everyone is saying that that's not necessarily true. So who knows whether he's gone off to the US or not? The report did say that, you know, Arsenal and Fulham remain in negotiation. So I don't think that's any sort of, you know, kind of a harbinger of a deal falling through. But it does feel like it's maybe not as close, if that is the case, than we thought in the first place. So a tricky one in some ways, but I think it's just one to kind of wait with. And I'm sure they're doing everything they can to push it over the line as fast as they possibly can.
Okay, we're going to take a break there. Afterwards, we're going to discuss Ollie O'Neill's new contract and ticket prices. This is an advertisement for BetterHelp, a portal for finding online therapy. How's your social battery right now? If you feel a bit drained or lacking enthusiasm to meet all the social commitments in your life, then that can be a totally normal thing, especially with things picking up as we head out of winter. I know that pretty frequently a weekend just doing a few chores and watching the football was about the limit of my energy resources. But therapy can be a place to help you gain the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your batteries. Contrary to popular belief, therapy isn't just for those who have experienced major trauma. The overall goal is to empower you to be the best version of yourself. And if therapy is something you've considered, then why not give BetterHelp a try? BetterHelp is entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. They'll match you with a UK mental health professional with a wide variety of expertise. There's no referral needed, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge, giving you complete control over the whole experience. Fulhamish listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/fulhamish. That's betterhelp.com/fulhamish. Part two of the Fulhamish podcast, Sammy James here with Peter Rutzler and Jack Collins. Just to say, if you're not aware, Fulhamish has a free WhatsApp service, which you're very welcome to join. We've been doing it for several years now, and it works pretty well, particularly on match days. You get lineups to your phone. We do little match reports that you get. We send kind of a preview and a review message before and after matches as well. And we send through any breaking news, so any transfer announcements, they come through on there. If you'd like to sign up, completely free, just go to fulhamish.co.uk/WhatsApp and follow the links in there. And but make sure you save us as a contact as well. If you don't save us as a contact, the messages don't come through. We get messages all the time like, oh, I've signed up, I don't get any messages. You have to save us a contact. If you save us a contact, it all works. So please sign up and get some of our messages. You can message us, but we get a lot, so we don't always message back, but it's more of a broadcast thing. But if you've fancy getting some Fulham news to your WhatsApp, then make sure you do that. Right, some news that came out yesterday from the club. Jack, you'll be extremely pleased to hear this, that Ollie O'Neill has signed a 3-year contract at Fulham. And given the fact that some of our young starlets have fell away in recent years, the most recent of which, of course, Fabio Carvalho, because we didn't give them a long enough contract before they actually broke through in the first team, I imagine you and many others will be delighted to hear that Ollie O'Neill has committed at least a bit of future to the club. 3 years is a pretty good deal at this
stage. 3 years
with
an option, isn't it? I think 3 years with an option.
Yes, you're right. You are right.
That's a nice bit of length on that contract, which is good. Ollie, oi, oi. I'm really pleased. I'm a big fan of Ollie O'Neill, not just because he shares my allegiances, but I just think he's a really quite talented footballer. And I think that's backed up by the fact that he was a man in demand, a player who lots of clubs were having a look at to see if he could fit into their, youth setups. And we've seen us lose players before in these areas. You know, we saw Mickey Bierith go off to Arsenal last year and play for their under-21s and do really, really well, by all accounts, in the youth leagues for Arsenal. We've seen us lose players of real talent, obviously, the ones we're all talking about. But, I think all the way down the age groups, and, you can knock it back a couple of years, and we were making 11s of players that Fulham shouldn't have let go, that included the likes of Berryetse, right? And when you have these kind of players at your disposal, that's the wrong word, but in your systems, you should be doing everything you can to work them through the pipeline and make that stick. And so to get a player of Ollie O'Neill's calibre, who was in the demand that he was, to sign a new deal at the club, to get him to buy into the concept that this is the right place for him, I think is a really, really good thing. And I think that it's work well done, and a much needed boost, I think, and watch others perhaps do the same thing now that there's a precedent for it. So at some point, Fulham had to reverse that slide, reverse that kind of typecast that players could stay and then walk away for whatever they wanted and wherever they wanted at the end of it after they'd broken through. And I think this goes some way to arresting that slide, which I think is a brilliant thing. I got asked by Gab Sutton on Twitter, do I think he'll go on loan? And I'm not sure. I'm not sure what the answer is or the other plan is there. But I wouldn't be surprised at all if he's around the fringes of the senior squad this season, if he is to remain at Fulham.
Yeah, Peter, you'll have seen a lot of him. You went to watch a lot of academy matches last year. He's 19 years old. He made his debut for the Republic of Ireland under-21s. I think scored a last-minute winner
against Sweden.
To keep the Euro qualifiers going as well. He seems like one of the hottest talents in the academy.
Yeah, I like him a lot. I think last year, obviously with Sonny Hilton doing so well and some others in that 21s group, he probably didn't get the same spotlight perhaps that he probably would want. And I think with Sonny going on loan, there's an opportunity there to sort of make his mark a little bit more and to get some better numbers that probably reflect his ability in terms of his goals, assists, that kind of thing. But in terms of what he is as a player, there's clearly a talent there. And it is really good news that Fulham have managed to keep him, because there were others looking at him, Premier League clubs looking at him. And 3 years, as Jack said, is a good contract. I think, like like with many in the Fulham youth system, you'll want to get that those senior minutes. I wonder if he'll stick around for the first half of the season, maybe first half to a year, and see how it goes and see if he can get those numbers up. And because that's the challenge, really. It's why you see there's always that sort of, oh, he's Sonny's gone from being really good for the 23s to going to League Two Carlisle. And I think it is difficult. There are a lot of young players in similar positions trying to get those senior loans. But I think, no, he's a talented player. We've seen that already. And good to see how he progresses now and at Fulham.
Thought it was interesting that he was given the armband for the 21s in that first game against Braga yesterday. Obviously, a day after signing the contract, they handed in the captain's armband for the 21s, which I thought was a nice touch. So, yeah, just be interesting to see if that one develops through the season with, as you say, a lot of these players going on loan now. If that's a something that is looked at more regularly, it's always one to keep an eye on, I think.
I guess there's an element as well, because in the first half of the season, you'll get some Carabao Cup matches where these players could get senior football, particularly if Fulham get some nice draws, and even if they don't, there's opportunities for youngsters to get played. Whereas in that second half of the season, there's far fewer opportunities for players such as Ollie O'Neill. I mean, you're not even probably unlikely to get played in the FA Cup, really, because that's a competition that clubs generally take a bit more seriously. But we saw last year, particularly that match against Birmingham, a little bit in the match against Leeds, where some of the youngsters got that opportunity to play senior minutes. And I imagine Fulham might be thinking to see if they get a couple of minutes in the early rounds of the Carabao. And then once January comes, if there's opportunities to loan them out, then have a look then. But yeah, great news on Ollie O'Neill, and fingers crossed he does become a future starlet that he sounds like. Ticket prices. I imagine unless you've been living under a rock for the past few days, you'll have seen all of the talk about this. It's been pretty widespread. But if you hadn't, I'll quickly fill you in. So Fulham announced their individual match ticket prices for the game against Liverpool at Craven Cottage, the opening match of the season. Now, this is for individual tickets, not for season tickets. And we believe there's not a huge amount of these tickets available. The club sold 15,000 season tickets of a capacity of approximately 20 to 21,000 next season. Then you consider that there's at least 2,000 to 3,000 away fans. There's probably only about 3,000 individual match tickets available. The ticket prices, though, are pretty eye-watering. So if you want a Hammersmith End ticket in any block, it will cost you £65 for an adult, £60 if you're over 65 or 18 to 21. It will cost you £35 if you're 17 and under. In the Putney End, it's £70 for adults, £65 for concessions, and then £50 for 17 and under. The prices just get more and more astonishing. In the central blocks of the Johnny Haynes, it's £90 for adults, £70 for a junior. In the slightly more outside blocks of the Johnny Haynes, it does go down to 70, but still 50 quid for juniors. The prices, there is a family section in the blocks A and K of the Johnny Haynes where it is significantly cheaper. There's not a huge amount of these tickets available from my memory, but there is £30 for adults in those couple of blocks. And then the Riverside needs a small mortgage to afford these ones. £100 for an adult, £100 for concessions, and then £70 for 17 and under. Now, if you follow me on Twitter, you'll know that this is a subject that I'm particularly passionate about. We launched the Stop the Greed protest a few years ago, and whatever you think about that, it happened, and I don't regret doing it or being part of it. And we've had history here before. It was bad 4 years ago, and it is bad again, Jack. And one thing to say before we discuss this, the Fulham Supporters Trust are going to be speaking to the club on Thursday about this topic to kind of get direct reasoning from this. They launched a statement saying that they're very disappointed by the prices, and that they will be asking the club for an explanation, that they weren't consulted on this. We're doing a special podcast that should be out on Monday with Tom Greatrex, chair of the Fulham Supporters Trust, Archie Rintutt. You might have seen a lot of his tweets on this subject. He's a football journalist, but a big Fulham fan and very passionate about football ticket pricing, particularly from his experience in Germany, where it's a lot more reasonable. So there's much more to come on this subject, and we'll hear what happens in that FST meeting, what the club's explanation is. But for now, Jack, I'd be interested to get your thoughts on it. I mean, is there an awful lot to say, really? Because it is just unbelievable what the prices are for this game.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's incredibly disheartening. I think they are, you know, way too high from where I'm standing. But as you say, there are people far more versed in these topics and with far more, you know, numbers and comparable examples to hand, to talk about it later on. So I'm not going to go into too much depth. I think we're seeing it in a lot of places. West Ham released their tickets for their first game of the season at home as well recently, and they're comparable, if not slightly higher, which is also absolutely nuts considering I think they're playing Southampton. But yeah, that's not a case of whataboutery. It doesn't make any bit of difference here. We should always be, you know, pushing for the fairest prices and to keep Fulham at a level where we can continue to attract new fans in the area and the local area, because ultimately, a club is a pillar of the community, not just a business enterprise. So, yeah, it's obviously disheartening, but I feel like you're going to get far more nuanced viewpoints than mine over the course of the next couple of weeks.
Peter, what was your reaction to this? Obviously, you weren't covering Fulham at the time that we were last in the Premier League when it was an issue then. I think what I found interesting about these price rises is this is the first time that we actually were able to truly gauge what the impact of the fans being pretty unimpressed throughout the 18-19 season, because then we went down the season after. So the season after, yes, we were back up, but we're in the Premier League. It was kind of a couple of games behind closed doors, but you couldn't really read too much into those, although they were high. I think it was like £40 a ticket. Back down for the Championship and then back up for the Premier League, and we've seen these come in. We still don't know what the price is going to be for the likes of the Brentford games, the Brighton games. You'd imagine cheaper. How much cheaper, though, is really key, I think, here. But yeah, what was your reaction to all this, and how much the Fulham fans... I feel like there was a huge amount of people that were deeply passionate and displeased when they saw these prices.
Yeah, there was. I mean, I judge from the reaction I have myself, from people speaking to me about it. When I first saw them myself, I thought, well, these are eye-watering, as you said earlier. I mean, they're very, very expensive for Fulham. And you're right that, you know, we need to see what other prices will be for the other games. But at the same time, it doesn't take away from the fact that these are really, really expensive tickets. You know, we had the thing with the Riverside season tickets as well. And I know the clubs say they're a one-off and they have sold out. And I'm sure these tickets will sell out as well. But I think the nub of the issue, and I'm sure you guys will explore this more at the weekend with Tom and Archie, is the fact that there are a lot of supporters, particularly at the moment, particularly with a pretty acute cost of living crisis, can't afford a season ticket. You know, and the season tickets... The general reaction I've had speaking to supporters, speaking to the trust, you know, they're pretty well received. They're pretty pleased generally about the pricing. And I think you know, obviously the Riverside Stand season ticket was the fourth highest in the league. I think we did a piece a couple of weeks ago, my colleague Matt Woosnam. I'm not sure if other clubs' ticket prices have changed since then. But at the same time, the cheapest was Fulham's. Fulham had the fourth cheapest season ticket as well. And I think the average... generally was pretty good, but this just completely contrasts with that. And I think the problem is, even though that the season tickets you would classify as reasonable for the Premier League, there are a lot of people who still couldn't afford those, and a lot of them will be Fulham supporters. And it wouldn't just be a case of always just cost. It could be travel, it could be that if you're in a different place, your work commitments and things like that. And when you suddenly are faced with a price as high as that for a game like Liverpool, you're not going to go and see that game, because if you couldn't afford the season ticket, you certainly can't afford a price like that. And as the trust said, as Tom Greatrick said to me for the piece we did on once they were announced, you know, they become almost tourist tickets. And then you're asking about the longevity of your supporter base. You know, if Fulham drop back down a division, which has happened and it could happen again this year, will those fans still turn up? You know, even with slightly cheaper ticket prices, with more seats to fill once the Riverside Stand fully opens. So, my initial reaction was shock, was surprise. As Jack says, there more clubs will be revealing their tickets, and I'm sure Fulham won't be alone in this. But it doesn't sit right. And it'll be very interesting to see what the outcome is of the Supporters Trust meeting on Thursday. Because judging from the reaction, there are a lot of supporters who, even overseas supporters, who'd want to come over for an individual game. You know, it suddenly places a price burden that they probably weren't expecting. So, you know, the tickets will sell, but that's not really the point of this. And yes, there aren't many tickets. And yes, the majority, the club are keen to say that they will go to those who are either Fulham members or have previous purchase history. You know, realistically, you're cutting out quite a few people. So, yeah, intrigued to see what the reaction is and what comes out of the trust meeting this week.
Right, we're going to take a break there. We normally would do emails after the break. I've got loads in the inbox, but a lot of them are around ticket prices, personal stories. I think they're best to save those for Sunday's podcast with Tom and Archie. So if you've sent in an email about that, then please hold fire. If you've got any kind of personal stories on how you're feeling priced out of the club, do send them in. hello@fulhamish.co.uk. You can stay anonymous as well if you'd prefer. But yeah, keen to kind of get some personal stories on that podcast on Sunday. So please do send in an email if you feel compelled to. After the break, time for the quick This Will Catch On. Part three of the Fulhamish podcast. It's Sammy here with Peter and Jack. Just one email that I wanted to read out to you. Jack, you'll like this, from our friend Pow, who sent in the long letter last week. He sent another email to say, "Last night I was listening to the pod while I was trying to get one of my kids to get to sleep. And then I heard the surprise when you mentioned my email. Thank you for your kind words. You have a huge fan of the pod here. Just for your information, my madness is growing and I'm now trying to spread the Fulham message into the Catalan speaking community. So I created a Twitter profile to comment Fulham news in Catalan. I hope you will understand my passion. So if you go to Fulham_Catala, Catala, if you are Catalan speaking, get on it. I also thought at this time, there's a lot of, and they've cropped up loads in the last few years, kind of Fulham fan accounts in different languages. I see an Argentinian one quite a lot. I've seen a Fulham in Japan one. I know there's tons out there. I'm happy to try and spread the word on, like, if you're running a really good account and it's in a certain language, send an email, hello@fulhamish.co.uk, and I'll try and shout one or two out every week. I just think they're really cool, and I think it's great when I just love seeing Fulham accounts in random languages. I want to see what's the most random language we've got doing a Fulham account. I don't know.
Shouts out to Fulham Supporters Club in Ireland. Running a really...
I mean, one of the least random ones, I would argue, but yes.
Yeah, but also Ireland, an official supporters club of the club now. So shouts out
very
everyone.
Well done.
Shouts out everyone in the gang.
But yeah, send them in. If you run a supporters club or a Twitter account or anything like that, send it to, I might regret this, hello@fulhamish.co.uk. I'll try and give a shout out to a few of you and try and connect with other people in your country as well. Because there might be a few people listening to this that didn't realise it was someone else in their country. Anyway, let's do This Will Catch On. I've got a few fun ones for you guys today. So the first one is for a player that does not play for us yet, but you'd imagine it is only a matter of time. It is for Manor Solomon, and it's from Mitchell Bex. He says, "Hi guys, love the pod. I know he hasn't officially signed yet, but I've seen this chant for the past few weeks or so." He says, "Sorry for the crappy voice. I currently have COVID. Not that that's changed too much." And this is cheers from Mitch. So I'll get your thoughts on this.
"Oh, Manor Solomon's magic. He wears a magic hat. He could have stayed in Tel Aviv, but he didn't fancy that. He plays it down the left. He plays it down the right. And when we score another goal, we'll sing this song all night."
Very good, very good. A reworking of a classic. I like the line about Tel Aviv, to be fair. That's not usually in the middle of it, is it? There's not.
No.
I saw a version of this, it was like, that was on Twitter. I can't remember who it was. I'm really sorry. That was, he could have gone to Wolverhampton, but he said, "No, that's shite." but I thought that was a fun one.
Yeah. I do. There's something about the Magic Hat songs, though. They are a little bit old hat. Excuse the bad pun, but
I don't know.
Feel like it's been done. But
I feel like they're likely to catch on. This is the thing. So like
that is a thing. Yeah, yeah. You're playing the classics. You're playing the hits.
We don't have a Michael Hector song anymore because Michael Hector has left, which means that the Magic Hat song is actually fully up for grabs. But we'll obviously have to see.
If Fulham fans have anything to go by, we'll sing that Michael Hector song for years, whether Michael Hector's there or not. We're still singing Stefan Johansson songs, and he's been gone a couple of seasons.
He's literally captaining one of our three biggest rivals.
Doesn't matter. Good song. Doesn't matter. Right, the next one is from Muzzy, and this is for Tosin Adarabioyo, a popular player on This Will Catch On. Another familiar tune, but a nice reworking.
Oh, baby, do you know what he's worth? Adarabioyo is the best on earth. He came from City to play for our team and win the championship beside Simream.
Yes, good. Good rework. Good rework. Like that. Like that a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that a lot. Yeah. Muzzy's in our Fulhamish community and he posted on that and it got a lot of love. So I thought it definitely was worth an airing on the pod. Right. The final two come both from Fulhamish regulars. They should know better, but they've each submitted a song. So I'll say on the first one, which Jack, you'll have heard. This is Dan Cook and George Cooper absolutely smashed on a night out going to, I think they were off to GAY in Tottenham Court Road, and they sung this on the tube. And I must admit, I was singing this in Sheffield. It is pretty catchy, so I'm glad to be able to give it a spin.
Oh, we believe in Adarabioyo. I can feel something inside myself. I really do think we're strong enough, no. Oh, we believe in Adarabioyo.
Yo, yo, yo.
I can feel something inside myself. I really do think we're strong enough, no.
There's not enough share in football chants in the world.
Yeah, no, good. Very good. Like that a lot.
There is a reworking to that, which I think is even better, but this is an old version that they sent me. So it's... believe in Adarabioyo, I believe in myself. I really do think we're staying up, oh.
Nice, yeah.
Which I think
nice,
is an even
that
better.
That is a better line.
That's good.
Yeah, like
iteration.
It. Good
I
stuff.
Actually really want that to catch on, please. Do you believe in life after love? It's got to catch on. Right, the final one. Again, another Fulhamish regular. Jack Kelly has come up with a new song for our new signing, João Palhinha.
Oh, God.
I don't know what this song is, but it's originally a West Ham song for Ludek Mislosko. And it is a good chant, so I'll play it, but I don't know where the original theme comes from. I'm sure someone will gladly tell me after they hear it. But yeah, I'm interested to get your thoughts.
João Palhinha, Portuguese machine, and he plays in midfield for the whites, everyone that I meet, everyone in the streets, they say, oi, big boy, what's your name? My name is João Palhinha, Portuguese machine, and he plays in midfield for the, etc., etc., etc.
Yeah. It's a fun one, isn't it? It's quite long, but I do quite like it. I agree with you. It's bugging me now what this actually comes from. But ultimately, yeah, it's good. It's good. I like it from Jack. It's a nice effort. Nice effort. I'm just sad he didn't play the piano while he was doing it.
Yeah, he could have actually, couldn't he? He could have. It was quite a half-hearted effort, just like etc. etc. etc.
No, I quite like it. Yeah. He was just like, you get the point.
Yeah, it was very Jack Kelly, to be fair. So yeah, if someone can let us know the tune, that would be great. What was your favourite out of the four, Jack?
Oh, I think probably Cher. We'll have to probably give it that, won't we?
Peter, your favourite out of the four today?
Yeah, Cher, hands down, isn't it?
Yeah, Cher is a banger. If that doesn't catch on, I think it's a criminal offence. It's the perfect one for Tosin Adarabioyo. But as we say, it's not up to us. It's up to the masses. And only they can dictate whether it'll catch on or not. Finally, we just need to name today's podcast. As ever, we're getting the Fulhamish community to name the ones that aren't directly after matches. We've had some very good names today. We had Avas Malik saying can't afford tickets. Patrick Lane, shahidiously overpriced. Jason Jordan saying Portuguesers and price gougers. Simon Patey, Pereira League bankroll. But I think for a second week in a row, Dara Current in our group has come up with an absolute doozy, which is super rare high prices.
Gosh. That's an easy one to write down. I'm glad I'm not making the artwork. Let's put it that way. Yeah, good.
Do you disagree?
No, I think it's excellent. Well done. Very good.
Obviously, it's using the fact that Fulham... I mean, I think it's a slight dig at Fulham's pun for the Pereira transfer.
Which I was trying to work out what Leno's one would be the other day. Like, Leno goals against us next year, haha.
I mean, it is going to get to that level of punnery.
Yeah, yeah. Lenovation in goal.
Oh, it's that, isn't it?
I don't know. I'm tearing my hair out, but we'll get there.
Right. Well, thank you very much for listening this week. And thank you very much to my guest, Peter Rutzler. Thank you.
No, thank you, Sammy. Appreciate it.
And Jack Collins, thank you.
No, thank you, Sammy. It's always a pleasure. It's nice to be chatting away.
Myself, Tom and Archie will be on the pod on Sunday discussing ticket prices. Next week, we will discuss matches against Nice and Benfica and any more Fulham transfers that roll around. But until then, have a lovely weekend. All the rights.